Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Sunday, talking some USC Trojan football with Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist from USCFootball.com. If you have any questions or comments for us, podcast at USCFootball.com is our email address. We've got a lot of emails that you've sent in. Our phone number, and you can also text us at this number, 424-254-9141. Yeah, send us a text, send us a voicemail. We'll play them. We got voicemails today. So we didn't have Dan Weber on this previous week. It's been kind of a crazy time, and I'm heading out of town this week to cover the Polynesian Bowl in Hawaii. So wanted to get Dan on. It might be a little bit of a longer show because you have a lot of questions, and I'll see what we can do while I'm on the islands in Hawaii. But we wanted to at least get this one out of the way because you guys had a lot of questions. Of course, there's been a lot of news around the USC football program this offseason. So we'll try to address all of that. Well, first of all, Dan, what's going on, man? How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Trying to keep up. This never an easy time with the January 15th deadline for the NFL early entry guys. And if you have some coaching personnel changes in that same time frame, and we have almost no access to either the players or the coaches, it makes for some interesting moments the first couple of weeks of January.
Yeah, it's we didn't really get the end of the year kind of conference call, and I know people have kind of asked about that before. But that was usually a good way to at least catch up on some things and clearing up a few things like from the bowl game. But not having that, and I'm not sure if we're going to be able to talk to Clay Heldner or anyone until signing day at this point.
We don't know. It certainly doesn't look like it. And it's been hard to get. For example, just the other day, we got a story in a very reputable newspaper, the Melbourne Australia Herald Sun, with a pro football, pro Aussie rules football player, fairly prominent guy, 26 years old, announcing he was retiring from Aussie rules football, heading to the U.S. He'd signed a 4-year scholarship at the University of Southern California. When you talk to people at USC, they say, we're not announcing anything about anything. We've announced our scholarship guys to this point, our signees, and that's it. And so, so I don't know. You're looking at this this story in the Australian paper, and you're saying maybe they don't really understand what it is to come play football at, you know, in the United States, or what? We really don't know. We don't have a good answer. We just know that some guy who says he's not playing Australian rules football anymore is coming to the U.S. and saying he's got a scholarship. And we have no idea if he does or doesn't.
Yeah, that's all. That stuff is kind of weird. but yeah, it'd be hard to bring like a fifth scholarship kicker punter on this USC football program. But yeah, there's some weird kind of stuff with that.
So, and I don't know if that means, you know, Chris Kilby, this was his last year. He listed it academically as a, you know, the Australian punter that they had, you know, this year and last year. Listed as a redshirt junior but a senior academically, does that mean that he's moving on? You know, he wasn't the regular this year. Again, a lot of questions that we really don't know if we're going to get answered before signing day. Just haven't heard much.
No, we certainly have not. Okay, so let's move forward here, and I want to jump into some of the topics that we have today. So just off the top, we have a lot of questions on all the stuff, but just off the top, I wanted to kind of talk about the latest, what we've heard, Rasheem Green. So since we've had the podcast, Rasheem Green was undecided as of yesterday. He's now declared for the NFL draft. Also, and we have a bunch of questions about lots of coaching questions, so we'll get to all that stuff. But Dylan McCullough was joined the program in March of 2017. All accounts, been great coaching the running backs. He's now moving on. Eric Bieniemy was the running backs coach of Kansas City. He gets promoted. He's going to be the offensive coordinator now. Dylan McCullough ended up playing. You know, they were teammates with the Bengals. Close relationship. Really excited. Great opportunity for him. So, and you know, he told me over text message that he, you know, that Clay Helton and Lynn Swann fought hard to keep him, but this was just too good of a situation. So, not ideal for USC. Rasheem Green, a super productive player for the defense. And Dylan McCullough, you could argue, you know, the best or one of the best assistant coaches. So, a couple of big departures, Dan.
Yeah, I think Dylan is a surprise just because, you know, it took a personal relationship, I think, you know, and an NFL opportunity. And I don't know if it, you know, going back to the Midwest had any effect at all. I think it was the relationship with Eric Bieniemy and one of those, you know, if it's your good friend and he wants you to come join him, man, that might be hard to turn down. I mean, what it does is it gives Clay an opportunity. He did such a good job of finding Deland McCullough. Now you go out and you find the next Deland McCullough, and, you know, there may be a couple of different ways you go there, but you really need to probably in this one, you know, break out of a comfort zone. Even if it is a person with some USC background, still, I think it's something that you gotta really make a big move here, and you know there's been, you know, a lot of criticism about you know, promoting from within and moving you know, grad assistants whether they technically are that and when you look at Kerry Colbert and Brian Ellis, you're looking at guys with that aren't your typical, you know, grad assistants, but you can, you know, move them into jobs and think, boy, these guys are good. I mean, I always remember Pete Carroll said that the one player he saw as the most qualified and the most the one he would pick most to be a coach was Kerry Colbert. So Pete had always identified him as he's got the most traits of any player I've had to be a successful coach. And Brian Ellis probably gets some, you know, unfair shots, to say the least. I thought they did a really good job figuring out how to get him here as a grad assistant. I mean, the guy had been, you know, the offensive coordinator for the Boca Raton Bowl last year, and they racked up 52 points. And I know people make fun of Western Kentucky, but they finished in the top 25 two straight years. And I know he didn't go to Purdue with Jeff Brohm, who I think is as good an offensive mind as there is in the country today, and proved it at Purdue, I think, last year. But from what I understand, his longtime assistant offensive coordinator had gone somewhere else the year before and saw the chance to come back to Purdue and with Jeff Brohm. So he came back, and that left Brian kind of hanging out there. And I thought USC did a good job to move in and get him to come to USC as a grad assistant rather than going somewhere else as a full-time assistant. So I don't know that all the criticism is warranted, but I think the Deland McCullough opening really puts the hat on Clay to really get the job done there. As far as Rasheem Green, I think as far as the players leaving, I think Ronald Jones had to go. I don't think any question about it. I'm kind of glad he signed with Lee Steinberg. I think that's pretty neat. And then Sam, I think when we left the locker room after the Cotton Bowl, he was gone. He wasn't having any fun. This had become kind of a burden. And if you're going to have not as much fun as you'd like, you might as well go to that famous league for not having fun and get paid for it, and get your career started. So I think that made a lot of sense. I think Rasheem has done so well this year, even though I'm guessing the hesitation was he probably didn't get graded as highly as he thought he should, and I think some of that was because he had leaned down and he was under 280, and I'm not sure that they see him as an edge guy. So I think that probably hurt him, and he probably is going to be looking at adding some weight before the combine. The only one that surprised me a little bit in talking to him after the Cotton Bowl was Deontay Burnett. I don't even think it had crossed his mind about leaving early for the NFL. But I think the more people have asked him, the more he thought about it. And then I don't think there's any question that signing Amon-Ra, St. Brown, has to make you think maybe there won't be as many opportunities next year. I mean, here's a kid, Deontay Burnett, leaving with the Rose Bowl record for most receptions and now the Cotton Bowl record for most receptions. I'm not sure how much more you can do to add to your resume. Is he going to get bigger, stronger, quicker? Maybe a little bigger. Maybe you don't want to get too much bigger if you're Deontay. So I think it was a little bit of surprise because it hadn't been something I don't think that he was thinking about. But if you look back at what's happened, it makes sense for him. So I think USC's kind of in a place where you thought they would be after after the early entry guys to the NFL, and not in a bad place. I don't think USC's in a place where they can't make up ground almost everywhere. Obviously, the quarterback is the question, but I think they've got a shot when you look at the departures. But I think they got to really make a move with the running backs coach.
For sure. And we're going to jump into these questions where we kind of talk about that. We'll start off with some of the coaching stuff. Before we do, I just wanted to thank our sponsor, Indochino. So it's pronounced Indochino, Indochino. So custom-made suits, custom-made shirts. I'm very excited. I put my order in for a cool custom-made shirt. You can go to one of the Indochino stores and have them do full-on body measurements. So it's all measured to fit, or you can do it at home. I had my wife kind of take the tape measure out, and there's a video online. You go through it all, and she measures everything for you. So they measure all your stuff, so it's kind of cool. It's the largest custom apparel company out there. So they make shirts and suits to your exact measurements for a great fit. There's a wide variety, high-quality fabrics, huge selection, and you can personalize all the details, including lapel, jacket lining, monograms, and all that. So you pick your fabric, choose a customization, submit your measurements, and then place your order, and then you should get your shirt or suit in 3 weeks or less. So go to Indochino.com, or you can go to any of the storerooms across North America. So this week, all my listeners, any premium Indochino suit you'll get for $359 at Indochino.com when you enter USC at checkout. That's over 50% off the regular price for a premium made-to-measure suit. Plus, shipping is always free. So, Indochino.com, promo code USC, any premium suit for just $359 plus free shipping. So, it's an incredible deal for a perfectly tailored suit. So, I'll let you guys know when my shirt comes in, and then I'll do the suit part afterwards. So, Indochino.com, use promo code USC. All right. So, let's we had a Dylan McCullough voicemail for you, Dan. So, I'll start off with that one. Here we go.
Hey, Ryan. Love the podcast. It's about 6:15 Friday morning. Of course, first thing I do while my car's waiting, warming up, is check out the news coming out or new development for the Trojans. And it just got some alarming news. So, looks like our running back coach is headed to Kansas City. Wow. I'm shocked. First year at the Trojans, and now he's gone. Where does that stem from? I know it's probably a great opportunity for him, but not good for the Trojans. I'm just trying to think out of the box. Is there something we can do to try to keep some of these good coaches around? Is it a financial thing? Maybe do we got to look into paying our guys a little bit more, especially our quality guys? Hopefully this doesn't do anything to deter any future running backs that are coming. What is this year, next year? Anyway. Thanks for the show.
Boy, I hate to hear that, waiting for my car to warm up. That sends chills down my spine, remembering the days, back home. But, I think USC is never going to be LSU, for example. I think at LSU, Texas A&M, where they spend almost twice as much on athletics as they do at USC, and spend more than anybody else, made a run, you know, and they're spending more on their head coach and all that, made a run at the defense coordinator, I guess, at LSU. And to keep him, he was already the highest paid defensive coordinator in the country. LSU upped the ante Dave Aranda, they upped the ante to $2.5 million a year for 4 years, $10 million in all. That's just not ever going to happen at USC. I mean, I know there might be people who say, gee, DeLand McCullough is so good, and he is. I mean, you just aren't going to find a better coach and a better guy you'd want around your program. And maybe you say, you know what, we just have to outbid Kansas City for him. And even if USC, let's say, equaled or topped the Kansas City offer by a little, again, it's an offer made by his best friend and in football and somebody he's really close to. You know, USC might, you know, have to really go way over that number to say, we just have to keep you. I just don't see USC ever doing that. And it's just not probably, you know, I mean, at one time, USC had the highest paid assistant coach in the country in Monty Kiffin. But I think that was a package deal where maybe they didn't pay Lane as much and they knew Lane needed a babysitter at the time. And Monty came in and was the highest paid, you know, babysitter in the history of America. That ain't going to happen again. So I don't know that there was anything you could do to prevent DeLand moving on other than paying in a way that USC is just not going to ever do.
Yeah, that's I just don't see that happening for this USC administration. We also have more questions on DeLon. We had a text message. Ryan, the loss of DeLon is really going to be hard to get over. He was one of the best coaches possibly on the staff. I feel like we need an emergency podcast discussing this. Now where do we go? What direction are we heading? Yeah, we didn't do an emergency podcast. We're doing this one. And we also had Bearsecutor write in. He said, I write this on Friday. With DMAC gone and rumors we may lose more valuable assistant coaches, if this plays out, there will be inevitably a degree of instability that will add to Helton's challenges. But it does make 2019 the crucible. That's a good thing. I'm still looking for Clay Helton to prove himself, his system, judgment, and flexibility as a head coach. Yes, Helton faces great challenges next year, but if he's the long-term coach we need, he should be able to pull it off. If not, it's past time to pull a plug and blow things up. There are no villains here. Pat Hayden, Sark, etc. are no longer in the house. This is the accumulation of sanctions leading to Kiffin, clearly the best option we had at the time, to Hayden, to his list of sins, tarmac incident, hiring of Sark, failure to fight the NCAA, given an unproven place holding head coach without a Rolodex too long to contact. Helton hiring was a bank shot. Maybe he will be a great coach somewhere someday, but USC can't wait. And plenty of guys like Kyle Whittingham, Leach, even the SDSU coach who could roll through the Pac-12 next year at USC, even with major staff turnover and the departures of two first-round draft picks on offense. Excellent head coaches do not lose all the good staff, but refuse to move all their weak links. I don't care how much support they are getting from Heritage Hall. Time to earn your extension, Clay. Bon chance, Bearsecutor. Wow, that was long.
I can't find a point in there from the Bearsecutor that I disagree with, actually. The only question I might have, he talked about 2019 being the crucible. I think 2018 is the crucible. With the challenges and the opportunities. I mean, you've got both going for you. And the ability to make it, you know, go one way or the other. I think, you know, a great coach, a coach who's a USC-capable coach for the long run makes 2018 work for him. And despite the, you know, the staff challenges, despite the players leaving. I mean, that's what you expect. If you're going to have a good program, you're going to have guys who are going to leave all the time. I mean, that's just what happens. There may be, you know, some place that they used to kid. I covered Kentucky, and they used to kid, Larry Bird kidded Rick Roby a long time ago. But when he came to the Celtics, and Larry Bird said was kidding him about having to take a pay cut when he came to the Celtics from Kentucky. And there may be some programs where moving on to the NFL isn't the obvious choice, but there aren't many. Most places, those kids are going to move on, and when they're that good, and you just have to, that has to be built into your program. And yes, he may have really done that with JT Daniels, and they've got two quarterbacks that are going to, you know, fight it out, and both certainly improved, this past fall. So we'll see. I mean, that's how you want to set up a program. They've got a defense, you know, can they take advantage of it? I think they've got a defense that was better than the numbers showed, and has the potential to be the kind of defense you can win with next year. It doesn't have it if you give up 13 plays, 40 yards or more, almost won a game. You can't have the breakdowns. Got to be sound, but talented enough, technically enough, you know, proficient enough, physical enough, as they showed in the Cotton Bowl, to be the kind of shutdown defense that absolutely should win the Pac-12. You win the Pac-12, you got a shot. I mean, let's face it. Last year, as many issues as USC had, if they don't blow the Washington State game, they're in the playoffs. You know, wouldn't have deserved to be necessarily. But they'd have probably knocked Alabama out of the playoffs. Now, again, you know, you don't have to say that that's the right thing. It's just the thing that would have happened if you would have gotten it done week after week after week, which USC didn't. Now they've got to do it this year. They got to get it done this year. They got to have a great, you know, they got to have a great finish in recruiting. They got to have a great spring practice. They got to be fundamentally sound. They've got to figure out how to. I mean, I've been thinking about this. They usually look pretty good in spring when they've got enough players. They almost always look good the first two, maybe 3 weeks of fall practice. And you're very optimistic. They're fundamental. They're physical. They're not getting ready for any game. They're getting ready for football. Then they start getting ready for the games. And they start doing the week-to-week stuff. And they start going into sort of NFL mode and in shorts. And people stop competing. Or they don't have the ability to. Do you bring on your younger guys and you bring it on your linemen? I'm not sure. I think they have to figure some things out about practice and about preparation, and how the good things that seem to be happening in spring and early fall carry over to the entire season. I mean, I know people dismiss the fact that Urban Meyer went two times, 2 hours, in full pads once Ohio State got to Texas, got to Dallas for the Cotton Bowl. That has to mean something. I mean, Urban Meyer, pretty good coach. Urban Meyer knows what he's doing.
He knows what he's doing, yeah.
Yeah, you know? And for people to act like, you know, what does he know? No, what do you mean, what does he know? He's a great college football coach. And he went physical that final week. Well, he wasn't worried about their legs or, you know, he went out and worked them hard.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, here's... And you got to think about that.
Well, so we were talking about this on the live show we did on Thursday, and there was a lot of questions about making big changes and all kinds of stuff. And my kind of thought was, and I wanted to get your thought on this. I know we have a lot of questions, but this is kind of important. Clay Helton has his philosophy, and it doesn't seem like that's going to change. So even in the, you want a coach, you know, that's learning on the job to be able to adjust, but he seems like he's sticking to his guns. So if he was doing no pads November and not putting pads on before the bowl game and giving players a week off and stuff like that, I don't see that changing. I mean, do you? It just seems like that's his philosophy coming into it is not changing.
I think it's better. I think it's better. I mean, because I think one of the difference, one of the things that happened, and this is the thing that Pete Carroll did so well, and I know people, Pete, we know he's gone, blah, blah. No, one of the things that they did so well is his players were convinced without any doubt that they had practiced harder, competed harder, and were more prepared to do the right thing whenever it took that in any game they played. I'm not even sure they were, but they believed it, and that was just as good. I don't know that this USC team, if they hear excuses, we have to take it easy, we have to do this, we can't push them too hard. Oh, they're like, you know, they had 12 games last, you know, 12 straight games and no bye, da 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 da. I don't see the same kind of confidence being built in this team with Clay as I did in those Pete Carroll teams. I think Clay has to figure out a way to have this team. Now, he changed last year. He changed, took the music out of practice. It made it much more serious and much more regulated and figured out we're going to do this attention to detail and we're going to get it just right and we're going to keep it the same Well, I think one of the things that we saw happen this year is by keeping it exactly the same as last year, as what had worked for him last year, it didn't work this year. It didn't have that same impact. I think you need to keep evolving. You need to keep adding. You need to keep figuring out where do we go from here. I don't think that happened as much as it needed to this past year. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things, you know, that Pete emphasizes is, you know, that game tempo. And I don't know if you go in and without pads every single day, I don't think there's any way you can go game tempo, especially for your linemen. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to go all 2 hours at game tempo in pads, but if you need a session, you know, where your offensive linemen are going against the your D-line and pass blocking or whatever, and you need 10 minutes. You got 10 minutes where you can do it the way you're going to do it on Saturday. And I just think that was missing. I think the other thing that it got a little boring, I think, for the kids. They knew exactly how every practice was going to go. And
it's a routine.
It wasn't very exciting.
No, Keely was talking about that. It was like Keely mentioned that in the thing. It's like it was just a routine all the time. And at some point, you just got to mix things up. And, I told her, like, yeah, Coach Harvey Hyde, I know it's old school coaching and stuff, but if he saw something that wasn't going right, he could flip practice on its head and just do something, you know, punters, you're now the court. I mean, whatever, he would do something crazy just to mix things up. And I don't see that happening, anything close to that happening ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think they needed a year ago to kind of regularize things and get them normalized and routinized and all of that and to get them, you know, get the music out of there. I do think the music was a distraction. It didn't add anything. It was kind of trying to be, on the cutting edge, blah, blah, blah. And it just didn't matter. You know, it is kind of a classroom. But I think once you've got that, then I think you move to the next thing. And how do you get them ready to play in games? How do you get – and the hardest thing about any coaching at any level in any sport is how do you make practice absolutely simulate the game, the pressure, the speed, the temp, all the things that you have to do in practice. And there's no one way to do that. But it's pretty clear that USC practices often did not get them ready, most of the time, did not get them ready for game speed, game pressure, game conditions this year. It just didn't. I mean, it was clear. And they've got to figure out how to do that. And I think getting rid of no pads in November would be the first. I mean, these kids would tell you, oh, man, we'd get there and we'd look to see what was in our locker rooms, and if there weren't pads, that was great. I don't think that's the way to go. That is not the way to go. It's not the right way. Because I guarantee you, Ohio State is going to be wearing pads, and they're going to be wearing pads. I mean, honestly, it was – unnerving to be standing in the end zone up close and watching those Ohio State D linemen go through their pregame paces. They were going, I mean, they were so athletic, obviously, to begin with, and there were so many of them. And to watch what the coaches did with them, to watch the quickness and the power and the body control and the lean and the explosiveness and all of that, and you just thought, what they're doing, USC is not prepared to handle. And that was the same feeling you had before the Alabama game on the same field the year before. You see them up close and you see what they're going to do, and you realize nothing USC has done will properly prepare the offensive line, let's say. And yet, USC still gains 403 yards against Ohio State. They gained 280 or whatever. It shouldn't have been that one-sided in the way that game turned out. But USC allowed Ohio State to take advantage in one area so one-sidedly that USC couldn't, you know, stay in the game. That can't happen. I mean, when Clay talks about balance, that's a place you need to be balanced. You need to, you know, you can't have one element of your game so unbalanced that your, you know, offensive line, you know, can't, you know, just can't stand up at all because nothing else works. I mean, you've got, you know, a 1,500-yard, you know, career rusher in Ronald Jones that some people have as high as the number two running back in the country, and you can't even, you know, sniff, you know, running the ball against Alabama or against Ohio State. That's wrong. That was bad preparation and bad practice. You've got to do a better job. Now, they did some things pretty well. A quarterback, you know, Sam made some great throws. The receivers made some great catches. But, you know, you get to the red zone three times, you can't drive the ball in, you're not getting the job done. And that's, I think that's a carryover from practice and preparation. And that's got to get better. It's got to get better. And we need to see that in the spring.
Okay, well, we have a bunch of questions about the coaching staff. So let's try to run through these, and then the questions about, actually, a couple of basketball questions and then some other kind of random questions too. But the most of them are about coaching. So we'll start with Tarek. When hiring a coach, shouldn't the approach be the best coach available rather than what is convenient? Coach Helton's approaches recruiting that way. Why not hiring coaches?
You know, I think it's a combination of things. For example, I mean, I think having Brian Ellis, who worked with these quarterbacks all year, and steps in for what's really going to be crucial, obviously, in the winter workouts in the spring, and then incorporating JT Daniels in the summer. And I think he was really involved in recruiting JT Daniels. I think there might be a real advantage, you know, to having that kind of, and rather than bringing somebody new. I mean, again, we're out there, but all we could tell is the players looked like they respected him. I think he looked like a more active, involved coach in what they were doing. He's not that far removed from playing himself. He had, you know, experience under, I think, the best offensive mind in the country and Jeff Brohm. And he's been a play caller. So he's got a lot going for him. So if you say, they didn't do that much to move him up, but they did something, I think, a year ago to get him on the staff and to get him to come here willing to take a grad assistant spot. So I'll give him that one. I think every case is individual. I mean, I think you know, BKU, moves up from, the weight, weight strength and conditioning and had certainly, you know, put in all of his time and effort to becoming a full-time staffer, and they gave him a chance, and we'll see how that works out. I mean, I think he's done a lot of good things with the player. I mean, he's got a stubborn streak, and maybe that's what USC needs, is an assistant coach pushing back and saying, no, I think we need to do this, or we need to do that, or I need to be down on the field, or whatever. I like that kind of dynamic. So I think every one of those, you know, is a different decision. USC has brought some coaches in with what seemed like decent pedigrees over the years, and it didn't work out. And I think one of the things that made it difficult for Pete Carroll toward the end was he got assistant coaches that I don't think really understood what he was doing. And some of those were guys from the outside with no real connection. And some of those were guys that they elevated, you know, from grad assistants. And neither one of them necessarily worked at it. So I don't know that it's, you know, outside or inside or whatever. It's just getting the right guy. And the head coach has to make that call, but he has to make it for the right reason. You know, who's going to make us the best, the most competitive program we can be? And that's the key. And I don't think, you know, I mean, I think we knew DeLand McCullough was going to be a really good coach. I don't think we knew how good a coach he was going to be. We had to see that for ourselves. You just had a good feeling about him. His resume was sensational, but he was way better in person than his sensational resume. So is there another guy like that in the country? I'm not sure. I mean, he may have gotten, you know, the best coach you could possibly have hired anywhere in the country for almost any position when he got to land. So, you know, he's capable of that, and we just have to hold him to that.
He did it once, and USC fans would love to see him do it again, where you just get a guy that has no ties to USC that's just really good at his job. You're like, yeah, good resume, you know, not convenient. Like, so that's what they'd like to see. We got a text message. Ryan, this upcoming season will be T. Martin and Coach Helton's third year. Is it completely unreasonable to believe that our best hope to be relevant again is, quote-unquote, third time's a charm? Thank you, fight on. Tony Redondo Beach, class of 1999.
Well, I mean, it's been the history of USC. That third year often is the year. It was for John McKay after really two terribly struggling losing, you know, with a losing record after his first 2 years. He wins the national championship in year three. Same for Pete. Not, he didn't have, you know, he had a pretty good year too. Yeah, it's not been, I look at John Robinson and he won the national championship in his third year. So yeah, I think by year three, you know, there have obviously been some other things involved, you know, with the NCAA. And I mean, God knows nobody in the history of major college football has ever had to fire two head coaches in the middle of the season in 3 years. So, I mean, there are some things USC's had to overcome that maybe nobody else has. But I think year three is the year you just say, this is your team. There are no excuses. You're USC. Go out and show us what you can do. And, I mean, let's face it, he showed us some pretty good things. I mean, the turnaround in year one, the comeback at the Rose Bowl, the confidence on the sideline, you know, the coolness, the ability to make the big play when you had to make the big play, the game at Washington, you know, the big time showdown on the road where they just said, you know, we're USC, we're better than you, and we're not going to let you win this game. And that's what they did. You know, handling Stanford twice, which may be setting the tone and saying in the Pac-12, the rest of you aren't as good as we are. We're USC, we're better than you. And we're not going to let you. We're not going to let you beat us. We're going to control this conference. And USC finally did this past year. And now you build on that, and you say, okay, now time to take that next step up and get back to the elite status. And there aren't very many teams in that, obviously, that next group up. And a lot of, you know, that's what USC fans think, you know, from history and tradition and location and recruiting, that's where USC ought to be. And a lot of us agree.
Yeah.
And I think this is the year to take that step and act like it. No more timidity. No more, oh, I'm not sure if we can do this. No. You just say, we can do it. Whatever, you know, we need to do, however we need to practice, that's how we're going to do it. And then you do it.
We got a question from Trent. He says, with the latest news of Seahawks firing several defensive coaches, do you think Chris Richard could return to USC? Really hoping they can get a big-time coach to help with player development.
I wouldn't see Chris Richard. I mean, he, I'm, you know, isn't he kind of looking at head coaching opportunities and all that kind of thing. And I don't, you know, I would not see that at USC. I mean, I guess, you know, certainly worth looking at. It would be interesting. Be a nice. And I don't think it would be wrong to have, you know, people. Now we're talking about BKU challenging you know, Clancy a little bit, and I don't know that that's a bad thing to do. I think, you know, Clancy's got a lot of good, interesting ideas and ways to play the game, and they certainly seem to be picking up on it more and more in his year two. But that doesn't mean that there aren't some things that maybe, you know, he could add to his the way he approaches defense and maybe, you know, developing a deeper rotation and, you know, having more people that you could really, you know, really rely on until they're, you know, before they're thrown in there and you just have to hope, you know, you can rely on them. And the second thing would be the breakdown in the secondary. That's just got to stop. You can't have those 13 plays of 40 or more yards USC gave up. And I just shouldn't do that. I was looking at the 1972 team, I think, and the one that people have always said is the best USC team ever. For an entire season, they didn't give up a single play longer than 29 yards. Entire season. That's what you need. That's the insane kind of thing you want to be shooting for. and not allowing 13 plays of 40 yards or more. You just can't do that. That's not athleticism. That's not talent. That's just, you know, breakdowns. That's practice and getting it done and paying attention and to detail and developing really good habits. It just shouldn't ever happen. And that can't be allowed to happen again.
We got a question from Mike in the Bay Area. Text question. I just saw that Georgia assistant strength coach will be the new strength coach at Oregon. I'm a little worried about it. I feel this is a move we should be making to get the boys up to snuff to play big boy football after the way we were manhandled by Bama, Domers, and Ohio State. Are the Ducks putting more into their program than we are? Thanks for all the content and hard work you put into the site. As always, fight on. Mike in the Bay Area.
Yeah, I think the Ducks have to. I don't think they've got any choice. I don't know that USC is necessarily going to get out resourced and strength and conditioning. And I will say this: I thought the summer conditioning was the best I've ever seen at USC. I thought it was really good. I thought the way they related the conditioning work to the position stuff, and you know that it wasn't just conditioning for conditioning's sake, but it was conditioning for football-related stuff. I thought they did a really good job at that. I thought they worked really hard. This was a team that wasn't out-conditioned. This is a team that never didn't show up at the end, I don't think, you know, at least physically. There might have been a Notre Dame game where they just, you know, threw in the towel. But strength-wise, they don't look at times. When you look at USC's offensive line, they just don't look, they don't have a posture that you think, okay, those guys can get the job done. And that could be just strictly the luck of the draw. Although last year you had the big group and they didn't sometimes necessarily look like they were ready. And this year you had the smaller group. And, you know, again, is that coaching? Is that practice? Is that other things other than just strength and conditioning? I don't know that it's easy to, you know, lob a grenade in the weight room and say, oh, and blow it up and start all over. Not sure that that's the case. I don't know that the approach is that. And I know that people say, well, Chris Carlisle, let's do it that way, you know, under Pete. And Ivan Lewis is a Chris Carlisle guy. I mean, and I don't know that the concepts are all that different. And I will say this, you know, for years, Stanford has been the strength you know, leader in the Pac-12. And USC certainly had no issues strength-wise in two games against Stanford this year. The other, you know, strong boy in the Pac-12 more recently is Washington, with a bunch of, you know, high-round draft picks and prospects and all that. And USC certainly didn't, you know, take a back concede at all to Washington in that showdown a year ago. So I don't know that it's that obviously something that's got to be really done, you know, in strength and conditioning. Is USC ever going to look like Alabama? I mean, I don't think any team in modern football has looked like Alabama. I know Oklahoma came into Kentucky one year on a Barry Switzer team, and they looked like they basically had a, you know, World Wrestling Federation lineup of guys. They're like, wait a minute, these guys are in college? And all of that. But other than that, I don't know that, you know, you wanted USC to look a little bit more like they were ready to play up front against Ohio State. And on defense, they were. So, you know, it's the same program that's, you know, developing those guys. So so I think it might be more than just the weight room.
We had Scott in San Diego text in also. Hey, Peristyle crew, for Dan, with rumors that Clay is going to promote Brad Ellis to quarterback coach, I'm concerned that no one, all caps, seems to give Clay solid coaching advice. Clearly, he listens to his dad instead of common sense regarding position hires. Is there someone in the program who is giving Clay solid advice, or his office, or is his office impenetrable to good coaching advice? Thanks, Scott in San Diego.
Well, I guess we'll find out. That's a really good question. I mean, again, it didn't work out maybe the way you would have liked to see it. For example, I loved what Western Kentucky, and I know that's anathema to so many guys, I love what they did on offense the last 2 years. I really did. I think Jeff Brohm, terrific, terrific coach who went to Purdue, immediate impact. They produced two top 25 teams back-to-back years at Western Kentucky. That's impossible. I grew up in Kentucky. You can't do that. He did it. But, you know, you had Tyson Helton and Neil Callaway came from that staff. And then now you get, you know, Brian Ellis. You know, I don't mind that, you know, maybe some people would say, well, why don't you get Jeff Brohm? And I can understand somebody maybe saying that. And I do think, you know, he's the guy. And it doesn't always work out that you get the guy. I remember, you know, back when I worked for the Bengals, and Bill Walsh had been the offensive coordinator for the Bengals for a while, and then he moved on, obviously, to bigger and better things. And then you had this whole series of coaches who got head coaching jobs at in the NFL, and all of them were listed as he was – Bill Walsh's offensive coordinator, and then they'd flop. And you said, wait a minute, Bill Walsh didn't need an offensive coordinator. Those guys had the title, but they didn't necessarily, you know, they weren't his offensive coordinator. He was his offensive coordinator. So it doesn't always translate when you get somebody from so-and-so's staff and that they have the ability to, you know, make an impact in terms of suggestions and saying we need to go this way or that way. Excuse me. Does USC need someone to do that? Yes. On offense especially, yes. Did USC need to do some different things against Ohio State? Absolutely. Did they need to go faster? Yep. Did they need to have, if you're going to run a run-pass option, did Sam need to keep the ball much of the time? Yeah. Did they let him? No. Did they make Ohio State defend things Ohio State didn't want to defend? No. So there were some real flaws. Did they look like they were trying to, you know, walk it up the field? And, you know, were they, you know, offensive coaches in training wheels? Yeah, looked like it. Even at the end when they hit, you know, they're moving the ball, and there's still kind of an air of uncertainty about it. What you'd like to see is this team say, here's who we are. See if you can stop us. Now, this is the danger of taking the philosophy that you coached under when Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian were here, because their philosophy much of the time seemed to be, well, we'll see what you're doing, and then we're so smart, we'll come up with a really cool play. And everybody will say, man, whoever came up with that play is a genius. And so it was basically kind of a counterpuncher. I know Sark the 1 year said, we're going to run 100 plays a game and blah, blah, blah. And that lasted one whole game. And then they went to Stanford and started counterpunching. I think USC's got enough talent and enough everything to just say, this is who we are. I don't think right now you can say who USC is. But they ought to be able to go into a season saying, this is who we are. We're good enough to do this, and you're going to have to try to stop it. And we're not going to try to necessarily completely adjust to you. Now, there are places we will, and we'll take advantage of things. But we're going to do our thing and see if you can stop us. And that's the kind of advice I would like to see Clay be getting from his assistant coaches. Is he? We don't necessarily see it right now.
We got one from Steve. It's a little long. He said, I can't thank you guys enough for the high-quality podcast you produce. We are blessed to have such a great platform to follow our USC Trojans. Well, thanks for that, Steve. Very nice of you. He said, I consider Lynn Swann to be a man of above-average intelligence and having all of his mental faculties in place. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. With the whimper hires headed our way with the coaching staff and no real changes, is Lynn Swann insane or a crazy genius? Is Mr. Swann a genius because he can't fire Clay Helton right now, Helton after his current record in an anemic conference, by not interfering and letting Coach Helton hire guys no one else would be hiring? Is that letting Coach Helton write his own pink slip? A non-Darnold-led team will surely lead to a 7-6 record or worse. That would allow the quote-unquote nice guy to be replaced and open the door for a big-name hire in December of 2018. I really like Clay Helton. I think he's a really nice guy. I thought he was more of a blue-collar, old-school football guy, but his coaching hires are less than ideal, and the soft practices are not in line with the USC tradition. Without Superman at quarterback, I'm afraid he will be exposed next year. Thanks for everything, Steve in San Diego.
Yes, I mean, Steve, I think, you know, that's the worry. And, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, quite that, you know, Machiavellian, the thinking that's going on here. But you could see Rin saying, look, Clay, I'm going to let you go. I'll let you have your, this is your team. He said it publicly. This is your team and you're hired. And we'll see how it works out, which is why I do think, you know, 2018 is really important. I do think, you know, people, though, to say Terry Colbert, with his experience at USC, with his experience in the NFL, with his experience at Alabama, just his general, you know, qualities, to say that he's a bad hire if he's elevated to wide receivers coach, I think that's a big-time overstatement. And I think he would be, you know, a very good caretaker, you know, for that position. I think he'd be good for Amon-Ra to come under Terry's, you know, wing. And I've made the case for Brian Ellis. So I'm not so necessarily, you know, negative. Is there a spot or two where I might say, you know, based on this year, I might go outside? And I don't know necessarily those spots, but there might be other spots, and you just might, you know, would you might maybe encourage somebody to take a look and maybe, you know, find somebody who work out better at a couple of spots? Yeah, I really would. Is Clay capable of doing that? It doesn't look like it so far. I think it would send a really good message to everybody in the program. Is it going to happen? I kind of doubt it, but something has to happen. And so maybe you, you listen. I don't know who you listen to necessarily. But it's time to listen. It's time to, you know, they could have had a terrific year with just a few, upgrades in some of the things they were doing. I mean, would they have been that great? Maybe not. But against the schedule and considering the quality of the Pac-12 and all that, they could have looked really, really, really good. I mean, any year you can beat Stanford twice, even if you have your highs and lows, you've done a pretty good job. And I don't know that they took advantage and were as good. I don't know that this program is any farther along this year, year two, than it was after year one with Clay. And I think that's a wasted opportunity. And I think a lot of that has to do with who you hire and what they convince you to do and how they impact you. I thought DeLand had a great influence on his position group. The drills they did with the footballs and the recognition of and how he had them thinking about what they were going to be, you know, how they were going to get yards after contact and what they were going to have to do on the first level and the second level and the third level and what they were looking for and how they were, thinking about it. All of that was great. Still, if the offensive, play calling, if the scheming, if the line blocking isn't up to snuff when you run against a Notre Dame that's all fired up and ready to play, or a Washington State that, you know, takes chances and does some crazy thing, or a Ohio State, you're screwed. And so I think, more has to come around than just this coach here or that coach there. And Clay has to put it all together. And I think you start by doing things like, you never say balance again. Balance is not a goal of its own. Balance is, if you want to say, we're going to really be able to run the football because we're going to be able to block you at the point of attack, and we're not going to be outnumbered at the point of attack, and we're going to figure out what we have to do that. And then if you figure out that you have to stop our run game by devoting extra people to it, we're going to throw the ball like crazy. And we're going to be able to do both of those really well. We're not going to do it because we're looking for balance. We're looking to beat you. And we're going to do the things you can't stop. And the reason you won't be able to stop them is we're so good at them. That's how we're going to do it. That's my take.
We still got more of these. Keith in Oakland. So we kind of talked about this already. He said, with the recent news of coordinators getting deals north of $2 million annually, let's say for the sake of argument that Clay Helton wanted to hire a coach or coordinator, but it would cost at least $1.5 million annually. Does he have the resources and or support to make such a hire?
I don't know if it can go to that point, those kind of dollars. My guess is, to keep T. Martin here or to keep Clay here, they'd go pretty high. They'd go higher than they're probably paying them right now. Because I think that would be the kind of thing that doesn't come back to Clay. That would be one of those program damaging moments that would actually reflect negatively on the powers that be above Clay. And I don't think, I think so much at USC is done like it is in a big bureaucratic university, so that I'm not blamed. Don't blame me. I think they could go a decent amount, and who knows what a decent amount is now when you see, some of the numbers. But they couldn't, they couldn't go Michigan and LSU numbers or Ohio State numbers, Texas A&M numbers. No. And USC doesn't have to. USC's got, I think, so many built-in advantages that let's face it, Pete Carroll, when he got it going, they didn't have the most resources in the country by far, or the facilities. They did, but they were smart, and they had a really good staff, and they had the ability to get really good players, and they coached them up. And I think that's what USC always should do. Got better, way better facilities now than they did, and very competitive facilities on a great campus in the middle of you can't have a better location, and the ability to dominate, the western, almost western half of the U.S. You just have to get it right. Once you get those good players there, you gotta get it right. You gotta figure out, those three or four, five national players, national recruits that fill in what you can't get in the West, and then you gotta coach them up. And you got to put it all together. And I don't know that that happened, enough progress to that happened in year two. But it's got to happen in year three.
This is a little long one from Dustin. He said, does Clay lean on the experience of others to figure out how he should shape the USC program. For example, I thought I heard that he had a relationship with Urban Meyer via Nike. Would he ever think to put his or another guy's who had a ton of success brain, pick another guy's brain for ideas / best practices? Conversely, does he ever look internally to get ideas? For example, Kerry Colbert played under Pete Carroll and worked under Nick Saban at Bama. Would Clay ever ask Kerry what those guys do to make them so successful to try to learn from that? And the second part was, for a guy who by all accounts is a great recruiter, it sort of feels like Clay doesn't value having recruiters on his staff. I say this because we constantly hear that Bradford isn't interested in recruiting, and you never hear about Callaway or Baxter making an impact on the recruiting trail either. If the thought is that they're such elite coaches, and then it's okay that they don't participate in recruiting efforts, would we ever consider putting like a Gavin Morris in that role and have him just be an insanely present on the recruiting trail? It seems like Clay is pretty confident that he has the best coaching staff he can possibly have. So why wouldn't he want to fill that role with somebody to pick up the slack for the guys who don't recruit? That's from Dustin.
Yeah, I think those ought to be, those questions ought to be part of the discussion in this offseason. I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, it's more of a commitment, I think, as some of the coaches who were fairly new to the staff and to the West Coast realize that, being a national recruiter is more of a challenge from Los Angeles. I mean, there's more of your life has gone in airplanes. In airports and, all of that kind of thing. It's not the same as if you're in the middle of the country recruiting, on the East Coast or Florida or wherever. So I think that threw, some of the coaches off a little bit. And they got to figure that out. And what the relationship is between the recruiting support staff. I mean, when you read that Georgia now has a recruiting support staff of 60, 60. It's a different world. And USC probably, if you're going to have coaches on the staff not doing as much recruiting for whatever reason, then I think you really have to amp up the support staff and really figure out ways they can't go off campus, but figure out ways that that they can get the job done for you, in the ways that they're allowed to on the support staff. I thought Clay himself got overextended a little bit. I know Urban Meyer and Nina talked about how much the early recruit, signing day, caused them to have to change what they were doing. Although my guess is Nick Saban did not leave campus and did not have to much at all. But I thought, Clay really had to put in a lot of hours and a lot of flying and a lot of days, coming and going. And I don't think that helped USC prepare for the Cotton Bowl all that much. So I think they got to figure, some things out, and that takes a really strong, committed, dynamic leader who sells that plan to the people he works for and sells it hard and preaches it and believes it and sells it hard to his staff. And that's I think what we want to see this year.
All right, we're going to go to a voicemail question. Here we go.
JD from DC with this brief question for Dan. Dan, sometimes I think even the most severe critics of this program, like me, lose sight of the fact of how easy it could be and should be to turn this program around. We don't need a total reset like at Notre Dame. We've got three great assistants. Martin and Helton are only in the second year of their respective position. There's every reason we believe they're going to get better in their third year. Even if they come up to B-, that's all we need. We've got a great wide receiver core. Looks like we're going to add ASB to replace Mitchell. That's all we need to be as good as anybody in terms of the receiving core. I know we lost Sam Darnold. We've got three very talented quarterbacks. If we design a system that uses their strength and hides their weaknesses, that's plenty of guys to throw the ball to and have a balanced attack. We've got a deep, talented, wide running back room and the best running backs coach in the country. We should be fine there as well. There are no problems on the offensive side of the ball from a talent standpoint. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, we only lost three players. We're getting back the obvious captain of the team next year. We've got arguably the best defensive coordinator in the country. And all we got to do is just land two cornerbacks for a change in this class who contribute, and we don't need to make any changes on the defense. But there are two obvious positions that stick out like sore thumbs that are being managed by coaches in the twilight of their career who've had abysmal performances in the past couple of years and are not going to get any better. At this age, what you see is what you're going to get. They need to be replaced. There's no risk involved. You bring in a young, energetic, unproven, but great, you know, energetic recruiting guy like KDU, that's a big upgrade. You bring in an outstanding, solid position coach with some experience, but who's laboring in, less prominent position like Dylan McCullough. That's a huge upgrade. That's what needs to be done. And if that is done in the next couple of months, you're going to see USC win the Pac-12, maybe only lose one game, and maybe get into the playoffs next year, despite the loss of Darnold, despite the loss of Jones.
There you go.
Yeah, that was JD sent that in before DeLand was gone, and it sounds like before Deontay made his decision. You can't disagree. They're not that far away. I mean, and that's the thing about this USC job is you come in and do everything right, you can get real good in a hurry. And it helps, we make fun of the Pac-12, but there's a plus in knowing that if you do everything right, you ought to win the darn Pac-12. You really should. And I think that's how you got to think about this year. And I would not ever use the quarterback thing as an excuse. As to, the two positions groups that really need some work. Can you individualize it, or is it more scheme to some extent, or is it not, necessarily coaching to scheme? I mean, it's hard, you look at Neil Callaway and you think, okay, this is a guy that, was the most inspirational player for Bear Bryant. This is a guy who, I believe when he came to USC, he had more Southeastern Conference championship rings than anybody who ever lived. As offensive coordinator at Georgia and line coach in most places, offensive coordinator, line coach at Georgia, Auburn, and Alabama. So his resume and for being a tough guy and all of that, is there something else happening that it's just not, Coach Callaway? Is this tied in with, some of the issues that people have with practice in general? I don't know. As far as the cornerbacks, there are some issues. There's no question about it. But technique and detail and guys just sometimes they're there and sometimes they're not. And got to give them credit. They showed up against Ohio State for the most part, and they've become pretty good tacklers despite how the practices are going. So tightening things down is really a key. And is that a part of what the coach does? Yeah. A big part. So, and there's so much potential in that, secondary group, so many good young athletes and talent and, somewhere you got to get it right.
We still got a bunch of questions left. So we'll try to get through all these. We'll just maybe go a little quicker, I guess.
Okay.
A lot of great questions. It's just a whole lot of them. Paul in Santa Clarita says, "Hello, Dan. I saw that Richie Wenzel for offense, Jacob Lichtenstein and Jay Tufele for defense were named the service team players of the year. From what you saw this past year, who of the service team players do you think could have a breakout year next year? And can you provide some details on how Jack Sears looked while playing?" Actually, forget the Jack Sears. We have some quarterback questions later, but who were the good service team players you saw, Paul and Santa Clarita?
I think they did a good job. And I don't think they were looking, in terms of naming those guys, and I don't think they were necessarily looking to who's the guy that could be the breakout guy and all that. Although you look at Lichtenstein's frame and you just think, okay, there's a lot there. There's a look about him that this is a guy that could fill out it and really, you know, you just like those big frames of those lean, rangy kids. And so, you know, I think they got that right. I thought Jack Sears, he had a good year. I thought he had a good, you know, maybe nobody's going to have a Jake, you know, a Sam Darnold scout team year. And I don't know that they quite went at it the same way. But I thought, you know, he, and I think one of the reasons he did was that I think Matt Fink had such a good year. And I think, it was a matter of keeping up with Matt and getting the job done. And, he's really athletic. He gets to top speed quickly. I mean, Matt Fink is a really good, you know, runner with the ball and clearly has done it a lot and knows what he's doing. And, you notice with Jake Sears, he's so smooth and he gets the top speed really quickly and doesn't have any problem. I mean, you got two good running quarterbacks, and with in Sears, you have a guy that is just a really, really, really special athlete. I think on the top end of his speed. So, what you saw with those two was not necessarily what you were seeing with Sam. And I like, you know, both of what you were seeing there. As far as other guys, man, we don't get – one of the hardest things to do is to try to pick out, like, say, what the offensive line guys are doing because they work in the very far corner from where we are. And so as much as we'd like to be able to say, you know, this young guy or this young guy, I don't think we know. I really don't think we know. I get the sense that maybe not as much is happening there as needs to happen. And one of the reasons is by the time you get, you know, November and you're taking the pads off, I don't know that they can get a whole lot better. So, I mean, that's one area I'd really take a serious look at and seeing which of those guys are ready to step up. I think some of the, obviously, injured guys, I mean, I love Greg Johnson. I thought he showed before he got hurt. I thought he was going to be in the lineup this year. He just got a lot of, you know, he got the size and the skill and the toughness and the quick twitch athleticism and fear, you know, fearless. Bubba Bolden obviously played, but you know, I think, you know, he's another one of those guys. And then Isaiah Palamala, who gives you a really big kind of Bubba Bolden type guy at safety. I think the, you know, there are three guys, second year guys, who I think are really going to contribute to the secondary. As far as up front, I wish we could tell you more. And I just don't think we know enough. I think spring becomes awfully, awfully important as far as those guys. And we'll know a whole lot more.
Yeah, so we had a bunch of – so Tarek wrote in a couple times. He wanted you to break down the skill set of Jack Sears and Matt Fink. If you think Fink can take over the job and lead USC to a Pac-12 championship. Oh, he also said – he went to Trader Joe's and asked for the corn pudding, but it's a holiday item, so they're out. So maybe next year. But we also had Bill and Mesa say, I'm not a real believer in a true freshman starting quarterback. The last one USC had went 34-17 as a four-year starter. I believe Fink or Sears will be named the starter. You've seen a lot more of those guys than the rest of us. Your thoughts? I really want to hear Dan's coaching, not report thoughts here. As to Sam versus Max, the quarterback position has changed so much that unfortunately Max was obsolete by the time to play his time to play came around. So a bunch of kind of quarterback comments, and maybe, you know, I know you shared a few thoughts there. If you want to share a few more, and then we'll roll on.
Yeah, I mean, I think Matt Fink has definitely improved his confidence in his arm and his strength in his arm, and he knows he can run the ball. And they know he can run the ball. And I think, you know, the combination of Jack Sears and Matt Fink gets you more run in the run pass option. I don't think there's any question. It would look completely different. I mean, who knows? They might have been fairly effective against Ohio State because I don't think Ohio State was what they were doing defensively. They weren't really accounting for the quarterback to run the ball that much. Obviously, USC knows how difficult that was, you know, with JT Barrett. So I think those two coming online forced the offense to do some things that, they haven't done. And I don't think there's that's a bad thing. I think Jack needs to work on his arm a little bit, getting on top of the ball and throwing it with just absolute confidence and, you know, toughness and, you know, being able to make that tough throw into traffic, you know, hitting a guy that's between a couple of people, all of that kind of thing. I think his control of the offense, it got better. I don't think they asked you to do a lot of things, and I think that definitely came around. But I do think you're going to have to factor in JT Daniels. I just think I love the word, I think is so appropriate, savant. I mean, I think, you know, he is that guy. He just sees things clearly. His timing is impeccable. His just, you know, that ability to throw, make that back shoulder throw. I mean, just, I don't know that you teach that. I just think, you know, there are some things you can either do or you can't do. I like the prospect of having, you know, the three-way, you know, quarterback battle. I like the fact that JT certainly, you know, changed the way he can move from last year to this year, his size and his athleticism. I just think he didn't have to, so he didn't, and maybe they didn't want him to, but he certainly, you know, can. So I think, and it's crazy to say it after Sam's first year, but looking at Sam last year, they may have a more active quarterback than Sam turned out to be. And I don't think we know the whole story as to exactly why Sam's escapability went down. You know, I mean, a guy that Penn State couldn't even begin to think about sacking in the Rose Bowl a year ago got sacked 8 times by Ohio State. A comparable, you know, they had obviously, you know, great, great defensive front, but not totally out of the same class as Penn State. I mean, those two had played down to the, you know, the last play 2 years in a row. So that changed so significantly maybe indicates, you know, more going on than you would think. But I'm optimistic about the competition because of what it's going to force the coaches to do in terms of designing the offense and being aggressive and not having to feel like, oh, we got to protect the quarterback or whatever. I mean, I just think I think they can make this work for them. And I just think those are the decisions. I would like the quarterbacks themselves to make that decision for the coaches. I mean, I think that's the kind of decision where you say, this is up to the quarterback. I mean, we had the one spring where you had 4 quarterbacks and nobody knew who Norm Chow was going to pick and why. And he trots out Matt Leinart, you know, for the spring game. And obviously Norm knew and Norm made the right decision. And USC obviously benefited, you know, tremendously from that. And I think, you know, that's what has to happen here is that USC gets it right, gets the quarterback competition right, gets the quarterback development right, and gets the quarterback, the scheming in the offense for the quarterback, gets that right. And I think the focus will be on all of those things, and, you know, now we'll see.
Yeah. Eric in Duck Country wrote in, it's logical to expect the team to take a step back without Sam next season. Will people tolerate a drop in on-field performance, or will people see it as an indictment of Coach Helton's coaching ability? Is Coach Helton actually on the hot seat, or will it take a few seasons of mediocrity? Thanks, as always, Eric in Duck Country.
I think that's a good question, and I think We'll know. We'll see. I think for some people, it would be an indictment, and they would very easily say the only reason you won the Rose Bowl, the only reason you won, 21 games, the only reason you won the Pac-12 was Sam, and Sam's gone, and now look what you're doing. So I think, you have to guard against that if you're this program, if you're Clay, if you're, everything that goes into it. And this is way before anybody's time, but if you were a little, kid growing up in Cincinnati, you remember, and I still think you guys might know the name, Oscar Robertson was the greatest college player ever. And he graduated. He took UC, Cincinnati to the Final Four a couple of years, and he graduated. And the coach left, and everybody said, that's it, it's over. And all they did, they came in with a completely different philosophy, and they played defense, and they were physical. And they won the next two NCAA championships, and they lost the third straight on a tip-in at the buzzer. And I still remember that, is everybody in the world said, you can't lose the greatest college player maybe in the history of the game and get any better. And they did. It does happen. It really does. And I'm sure we can find other, instances, of that happening. But I don't think you want anybody talking about it, thinking about it, excusing anything based on Sam leaving.
Yeah.
You can't. You just can't. If you think like that, that's a loser from the get-go. So you can't do that. So I'm not gonna go there. I'm really not. It's not an excuse.
It can't be an excuse. Tennessee won the national championship when Peyton Manning left, and they had T. Martin.
Ooh,
you guys
perfect. Yeah, exactly. And then there's somebody here who I think ought to be preaching that to the USC quarterbacks every single day.
Yeah.
Guy by the name of T. Martin, yeah. Who probably fairly familiar with that scenario. That's a great scenario. That's the appropriate one.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I think it probably still bothers Peyton Manning to this day.
Yes, I think you're right. But we'll see. But yeah, I don't think it buys him time that Sam Darnold's gone. It's just more pressure to make sure you succeed. Golden Trojan said, each of the past 2 years, the coaches have been late to insert key players into the rotation. Sam Darnold last year, Tyler Vaughns and Christian Rector in 2017. Who do you think is in danger of falling into that category in 2018? And Ryan, as someone who was on the Tyler Vaughns train early, would like to hear your thoughts on this too, Golden Trojan.
Joseph Lewis, I think, I was at a with a USC group from Connecticut. We're at the Battle of the Bands in Dallas, and they had their young son with them, and they said, oh, Dan does the USCfootball.com, and he said, my son's got a question for you, and he's looking up at me and says, what happened to Joseph Lewis this year? And I think that's a good question. But I think watching him will be of interest as to what happens. And if he makes it back and everything, he gets through the spring and gets all the academics incorrect, what happens to Jamel Cook? I think those are ones that, and I'm not saying going to fall through the cracks or whatever, but you want to make it so that what happened with Tyler and Christian doesn't happen to anybody next year. So those would be maybe people you would be looking at to see that it doesn't happen to them, and that you figure out if they can play, they ought to be on the field somewhere. And maybe does that mean you have a rotation that gets the job done? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with those. I think Levi Jones is a guy you want to see. I mean, heck, it could be JT Daniels if he comes in and just lights it up and doesn't get the start. And he's like clearly the better quarterback, and you're like, why isn't he starting? So he could be the next guy. But
that's a good point. That's a really good point.
It's hard to say right now. We're like in the offseason. We got to see spring practice or something first, and then you'll see Tyler Vaughns go, because Tyler Vaughns wasn't good. he had a hard time transitioning from high school to college. His true freshman year, he just wasn't all that spectacular. He figured it out and was great in the spring. So we pointed out, like, all right, he's back. Like, he's the five-star again. And it just took him a while to get in there. This is kind of long. Jim B., best USC football podcast out there. Thanks, Jim. Keep up the good work. The reason why SC is not in the playoffs is because the board of trustees at SC does not care that much about football. They don't do anything to deal with all the negatives that the program faces. They didn't sue the NCAA over the horrendous sanctions. They don't deal with the problems with the Pac-12. The Pac-12 never supported them against the NCAA. The scheduling is such that with the late games, SC doesn't get much East Coast exposure. Then there's the Friday games on the road against good teams in areas where there may be inclement weather. They don't spend the money. They don't need to on the program. They don't have the administration assistance and the football infrastructure that the big time power programs have, and they're not doing much to address these problems. The football powers that care about football address these problems. SC's board of trustees just doesn't seem to care that much. They just accept whatever is handed to them without a peep. Am I wrong? If I'm right, what is the solution? Should the fans, alumni, and boosters complain more? What if UCLA became a power under Kelly and started beating SC every year? Would that change anything? Fight on. Says, P.S. I hope I'm not asking a question that is politically incorrect. I've been told that you are not supposed to ask these kinds of questions at USC. After all, we must not question the almighty board of trustees. That's from Jim.
You know, I think the board of trustees has been so expanded, and there are so many people on there that I'm not sure that they would know a football from a pumpkin. I don't think that's the place to go. I think the leadership that you need to get football to where it has to go has to come from the athletic director and the head coach. And I think it's their job to win the president over. I mean, I've gotten to know Max Mathias pretty well, and he would love to have a great football program. Now, what that entails, does he understand? Does he, where would he prioritize that and all of that? I think it has to be prioritized for him by people in the program. I think Clay Helton and Lynn Swann have to make that have to make those choices. Have to make the case, and I don't think it's going to come from the top down. I don't think it's going to come from the board of trustees. I think you have to make the case to the president and the board of trustees that this is the way to go. And I don't know that that case is completely. I mean, I think there are people who just assume, well, we're USC. Look at the history. Look at the tradition. Look at Of course, that's the case. I think you have to make the specifics clear to the people in charge that, for example, I think somebody needed to make the case that $270 million to completely redo the Coliseum isn't nearly enough. And I would have liked to have seen somebody who said, okay, we've raised $6 billion. Nobody else has done that before. Now we're going on to another $3 billion. And a wonderful success for Max Mathias. And did anybody make the case that, hey, with that $3 billion extra, there might be some money in there that we could raise some of that money and dedicate it to doing the Coliseum right? And maybe we take, now we know they're tearing out all the seats and what have you. Until they start tearing out all the concrete under the seats, you still can hope for some, divine intervention at the very least, and say, gee, just, put the new seats in, put the new rows, put the new aisles, do all the stuff you need to do. Just don't tear the place apart until you get a better plan. Probably not going to happen. They're going to have a dedication January 29th. But just one thing like that, they just didn't get it right. And there are other places, in terms of the support staff and all that, it doesn't look like they've quite put their case together and gotten it right. And if you make the case that, hey, we need to do some things. And USC needs to take far bigger leadership role. And I know Max is now the chairman of the, the board of, I guess, the CEO group in the Pac-12. And he's also the chairman of the board of the College Football Playoff. So he's in a position to exert some leadership. I think that's where USC has to use him. And I think the people, you know, in the athletic department have to figure out what could he do and how could he help us and what do we need. And a lot of that starts with the Pac-12. You know, I think Larry Scott was very late to the party when he was trying to make USC's case right before the Pac-12 championship game. But make USC's case when you schedule them on a Friday night, the second half of two road games in at Washington State. That's when you make USC's case and you say, hey, we're not doing that. They wouldn't do it in the SEC. And that's where USC's got to scream to high heaven. It's just ridiculous that, you know, USC has kept quiet. And I think, you know, the whole idea of the way they get very little out of the Pac-12 networks, very little money, very little exposure. All those things do is, you know, offer money and jobs for, you know, people at the Pac-12 networks in the Pac-12. And USC's got to say, this has got to stop. This is ridiculous. We're not, you know, they spend more money and they get less out of it than any of the other leagues, networks, and it's a failure. And USC has to make that case. And nobody else is, well, I mean, the Chancellor Cal actually made, you know, started questioning. And I think USC's got to start taking the lead and figuring out where are we going from here, because this is not satisfactory, getting $20 million a year less than Rutgers and Illinois because they're in the Big Ten is not the way for USC to go. And they got to make it clear. But it's not the Board of Trustees' job to figure that out. It's the it's people in leadership roles in the athletic department. And we're not seeing that. And we're not hearing that. And we need to start seeing and hearing that from those people.
We got a text question. Do you think that we can actually see underclassmen play on defense? Levi Jones, Bubba Bolden. He said Johnson, Paolo Murphy, Wale, and the incoming linebackers are way too talented to waste a year on special teams or sit on the bench another year. Look at Georgia, for example. They rotate the young players in to get valuable reps throughout their college career and turn them into first and second rounders. Can we say that USC position coaches have lacked player development besides Dielen, who's no longer there?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely critical, because anytime you see this sort of lack of confidence, lack of, you know, a sense of we can get these guys ready to play, to me, that's a lack of confidence in your own coaching ability, and it's a lack of confidence in what you're doing every day in practice. And I think it's more on the coaches than on the players. And every one of those guys, I think he has to be a major factor next year. And if that means you've got to rotate, if that means you got to get them all ready, get them all ready. This is not the NFL. This is a whole different world, and you got to do it. And you can't just have them, you know, waste a year. You got to get them ready. Got to figure out, you know, what's going on with Connor Murphy? What's going on with Oluwole Batiku? How do you get them on the field? What do you do, you know, with those guys? And you're obviously going to have depth at, you know, safety. Well, how do you make them, you know, and what's the best place for Biggie Marshall? You know, is there a slot defender spot? You know, sort of a, I mean, a lot of people said, oh, he's a safety. You know, is there kind of a midway point between, you know, corner and safety for somebody like Biggie? I mean, those are just as valuable positions to play in the NFL now as anything. So, you know, would his size and his speed and athleticism, you know, maybe be really, really work out well as a slot defender? And you got to have him. They play, you know, they basically are on the field all the time. So I think USC's got to be smart, and they got to make the right decisions, and then they got to, you know, they just got to make sure that everybody that's got the talent to be out on that field has been coached up enough to be able to be out on that field and not be, you know, oh, gosh, I don't know if they're ready. No, get them ready. You got all spring, and you got, 5 weeks in the summer. You can make the case that they didn't do much in the Cotton Bowl prep work to get those guys ready. And that would be a legitimate case. I don't think they did as much as we've seen in past years when you've got those, you know, extra practices and another missed opportunity. So I think they got some makeup work to do in spring and summer. But I think, you know, they got the talent to make it up.
All right, we got here's a voicemail question.
Hi, Dan. This is Judy from Claremont. I'm watching this U.S. Army game of the high school recruits, and I'm kind of concerned with the number of, or the lack of number of kids saying they're going to commit to SC. What are your thoughts on this, and what's happening? We need help here. Thanks.
And then,
bye.
Thanks for that one. And we also had George in Oxnard. What do you think of Amon-Ra St. Brown's antics in the All-Star game? do you expect Jack Jones and Harris to tone it down next year? Is that just who they are? Thanks and fight on. That's George in Oxnard. So some Army Bowl questions.
Yeah. I think the numbers of guys saying USC was more a function of the numbers of scholarships. USC's in a position now where they don't have a whole lot of, you know, guys leaving the program, and so they don't have a lot of scholarships to give. I think the Murray kid from Modern Day is a perfect example of somebody they'd have had the numbers, you know, they would have had it. Had a kid like that. I just think, you know, they ran out of numbers. But as far as Amon-Ra, I love his skill set. I love the fact that USC will actually have a guy who can return punts. That may be the most important thing he brings, but he is good. I would probably not have him in the next locker to Jack Jones. I might not even have them in the same room. I would put a lot of space between those guys. I mean, I think that's what you do every day in practice. You coach them up, and in his case, you coach them down. You just, you know, calm him down because he doesn't need to do that. I mean, I'm sure, you know, we're not going to stop the talking, but as far as the you know, you tell them, okay, there's a reason there are no names on the back of USC jerseys. Not that we could fit your name on the back anyway, but there are no names on the back of USC jerseys because this is about the team. It's about the Trojan program. This is not about you, not about any one individual. Make plays. They'll notice you. But don't be thinking about demonstrations or spinning the ball or kicking the ball or whatever. We do not want you. And I think the kid's the kind of kid that with that kind of a challenge, I think he'll pick up on it. I think he'll be fine. He doesn't need to do that. And I think, yes, he ought to be able, they need to be able to make the case that you're not going to do that. Now, the fact that this is a team that, you know, is in the bottom, you know, I can't even think, we're bottom five in the country in penalties. It's probably not a good sign, you know, not a good indicator. This might be the challenge that the USC coaches have to pick up on and say, look, we're going to start over again this year. We're not going to allow guys to do dumb things and undisciplined things, and we're going to make sure they understand that because that's not the USC way. And I think that's one more of those challenges, you know, for Clay as a coach, is to get him and the staff to stop any kind of those, you know, undisciplined and look at me displays. That's not who USC is. I mean, people have no idea. If you watch Reggie Bush at practice every single day, we never saw anything like that. That idea that, you know, you would draw attention to yourself. Was nobody ever even thought about doing that, you know, at practice. Unfortunately, it got out of hand a little bit in that very last game. But that's the kind of thing I think you got to work hard against. And it's a good thing to do that. And we'll see. I think, again, that's another challenge of what's going to have to happen in the spring and summer.
All right, we're gonna talk a little hoops to end the podcast. We had a couple questions about the Anthony Melton. First, Andrew West LA. Can you guys please break down the DeAnthony Melton situation and shed some light on whether or not USC bungled this as badly as it seems on Twitter? Based on Chimezie Metu's reaction, it seems like the whole basketball team has been kept in the dark about everything, and this feels like a major development that could kill any and all motivation that USC had for the rest of the season, which has already been a disappointment based on preseason expectations. Thoughts? That's Andrew in West LA. And then John and Brea said, I just read the news that USC is suspending DeAnthony Melton for the season. Will the athletic program ever have the guts to stick up for one of its own players? Are they really this afraid of the NCAA? When will someone in this athletic department compete and quote unquote fight on and show that they care about the student athletes? Where's Lynn Swann? Oh, and where in the world is Larry Scott? Please describe for me what you think would be taking place if this was happening at a school in the Big Ten, ACC, or SEC. Do you think USC is handling this the right way? Thanks, John and Brea.
You know, I think one of the disappointments was the fact that on the day the decision came out, no one talked to the basketball team. Nobody, you know, explained it to them from the athletic department. Nobody said, this is what's going on, this is why, this is how. That's a disappointment. I mean, you have DeAnthony Melton showing up every single day. I mean, I got to watch some of the practice the other day, and he's out there, you know, leading practice, and a smile on his face, and he's dominant player, and, you know, going to class and doing all the right things. And, I mean, and, you know, nobody says at all that he knew anything about what was going on. You know, and that has been the NCAA principle, you know, that obviously got Cam Newton his eligibility in like 24 hours to play in the championship game was, oh, he didn't know what was going on. He didn't know about that money that passed hand, you know, changed hands and got to the family somehow and whatever, blah, blah, blah. Well, not his, you know, he's okay. And now we see that the kid at Louisville with a six-figure payment, Brian Bowen, who essentially, you know, they fired Rick Pitino and then the athletic director, Tom Jurich, after, you know, I guess it was an Adidas representative and the dad and all that got involved. And now, okay, so he couldn't go to Louisville. But now he's at the other USC on the East Coast, South Carolina, and they're putting him in to have his eligibility okayed and allow him to play at the University of South Carolina. And all the experts, I know 24/7 did a talk to a bunch of experts, and they say pretty much that he'll be eligible. And you think, this kid's going to be eligible? And DeAnthony Melton, who apparently has done nothing and not involved and didn't know about it, is going to have to sit out the whole year after being strung along. I know, you know, at first the thought was if USC makes him sit out 20 games, which would be two scrimmages in the first 18 games, that's way more than the NCAA would ever require in this situation to restore eligibility for a player who didn't know what was, you know, that anything was happening. And then USC gets to that point and says, no, we think this friend of the family got a trip to Las Vegas out of it, and that's we're just going to, you know, keep you ineligible the whole year. So they took a year out of this kid's life, and I haven't really owned up about it publicly, and I just think it's not been handled well at all. Why does USC not have an answer from the NCAA by now? Why is this kid still in limbo? And, you know, why do we hear that the compliance department thinks he shouldn't be in limbo? They think he should be playing. And that Lynn thinks it's risky. Why have a compliance department if you're going to not accept their ruling in this case? This does not look good for USC. I know that the team is really upset about it. You know, Andy Enfield, you know, it just can't bother him anymore. And when you watch him practice, you can see why. as good as D'Anthony Melton was last year, he's become a really good player. I mean, really, really good. But a 6'4 guard who can shoot, distribute, his shot is so much improved. I can see, you know, at first I wasn't so certain what Andy was saying. Watching him the other day, man, what a loss that is for USC. The one hope you have is that USC took it out on Utah a little bit the other night. And on Colorado, whose coach had kind of made some negative remarks after beating Arizona, who also had a coach and a player involved in the FBI investigation, and kind of, you know, lumped USC in there as well and indicated, you know, looked like they're cheating and, you know, their recruiting is really suspect. And kind of threw D'Anthony under the bus in the USC program. And they really went after Colorado, a Colorado team who beat UCLA last night and took it to Colorado. And I think the thing I asked the USC kids is, can you sustain this? Is this the way you played against Colorado? Can you sustain it for the rest of the year and play with the kind of edge that you played with against Colorado and play with that kind of mad attitude about how you've been treated and make it work for you and play for, you know, D'Anthony, who's not getting to play for you. And I think that'll be the thing to watch with the USC Utah game. And then the rest of the year, you know, USC's coming out and defending more, and they're playing faster, and they're trying to take you out of your game instead of, you know, letting you do your thing and then trying to react to it. USC's trying to take people out of the game and being much more aggressive and converting and playing faster and playing transition and running the floor and doing all the things that they've got the athletes to do. So we'll see if USC can make this work for him, but it's really a shame that this kid is caught up in this through no fault of his own. I mean, and let's face it, you know, the issue was people were trying to influence someone around him to influence him to use them as agents or, hell, tailors, for God's sakes, once he gets to the NBA. Well, I mean, they're not even talking about recruiting him to go to a school, to go to USC, or taking care of him while he's at USC. They're taking care of him after he leaves. I don't know that that's even an NCAA issue. And if it is, there are players, very, very good players in the country right now, freshmen, whose dads were being paid a whole lot of money by shoe companies to run summer teams. And I guess that's okay. But this kind of influence is so bad that this kid is going to lose a year. I really don't see it. I think USC hasn't handled it well. And, you know, welcome to the club. This is not the first time. Unfortunately, you think it probably won't be the last either. USC, has the NCAA had a vendetta against USC? Of course, without a doubt. Have they treated USC differently from anybody else? Yes, without a doubt. Should that mean that USC should basically just throw up their hands and say, hey, we're not even going to try to do the right thing here, we'll just give it? No, USC can't do that. You cannot do that, especially when you have a young man like D'Anthony Melton that deserves more than USC has given him.
All right, yeah, Dan wrote a great piece, too. You should check it out up on uscfootball.com about D'Anthony Melton. So. And I know you got to get to basketball today, Dan, so we'll have to let you go. This was a long one.
Yeah.
But a lot of questions.
They're on their way. So. Yeah, I hope they do. I've had a better feeling about them this week. I think they understand what they have to do, and tonight will be a real good test of that. Utah doesn't want to play fast and going to try to make USC play their game, and does USC have the ability to make Utah play USC's game, and does USC really believe in that in that game, that speeding it up and playing defense with just tremendous enthusiasm and effort that they haven't had all year. We'll see.
All right. Dan Weber doing a great job for us at uscfootball.com, covering some hoops too. So make sure you go check them out. And thanks so much, Dan, for coming on. A lot of great stuff. A lot of great questions as usual. So many good ones.
Yeah, really good. People are really thinking about this stuff. I think this postseason has inspired more real thought about what's going on with this program and thinking about it in the right way. There's, you know, some, you know, shots and all that, but I think there have been a lot of, you know, people thinking about it in the ways you hope everybody is thinking about where does this program go from here.
Yeah. All right. Dan Weber, he's off to basketball. I'm off to Hawaii tomorrow, so I'll give you more recruiting updates from the islands, so it should be fun. But yeah, thanks for tuning in. We'll try to do a show or something during my time in Hawaii. Maybe we'll have Keely do the recruiting one while I'm gone or something. We'll figure something out, but wanted to get one, you know, kind of a big show out there early on Sunday. Early in the week on Sunday. So have it out for all you guys. And I'll see what I can do while I'm in Hawaii covering the Polynesian Bowl there. But thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks for being part of the Peristyle Podcast family. We do appreciate anyone that listens and calls in and texts in and emails us and all that stuff. We appreciate all the feedback on Twitter, too. So thanks so much, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.